You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. And have you looked at the calendar lately?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It might feel like we're in the 35th week of March at this point, but we're actually closing in on mid-December. There's definitely less jingle-belling, but in 2020, we could all use a hearty dose of good cheer, right? But how? There's a stay-at-home order in place, you know about it. The usual marathon of holiday parties is, well, off. And well, it's just kind of hard to imagine celebrating after the year that we've had. While a lot, okay, most all, signs point to this being a fairly joyless holiday season, isn't that all the more reason to try and make something of it? We've got a cozy fire burning. Radio magic, please. The tree is lit, some eggnog is poured, and KCRW's Matt Gillum is here to help us navigate COVID Christmas. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Steve. Really nice fire, by the way.
It's a lovely fire. We can't see it. We can only hear it. But this is radio magic. We're doing everything like we usually do, virtually. Just like earlier this year, when a bunch of drive-through Halloween and fall events popped up, people are trying to get creative, right, Matt, when it comes to the holidays and the holiday season?
Absolutely. I mean, adjusting, whether that's expectations or basically anything else, has been one of the themes of this year, and Christmas time is going to be no different. There are definitely some attractions out there to take in, but remember that safety is the most important thing this year, and just plan on having a fairly low-key Christmas.
All right, staying in your car seems like a fairly safe bet. And I know this holiday season, Matt, is really providing the drive-through light displays time to shine, right?
Way to just go for it, Steve. And yes, there are drive-through experiences galore this year. You got an Elf on the Shelf-themed one at the Pomona Fairplex. Dodger Stadium is getting in on the trend, offering what they're calling Holiday Festival 2020. As they come off their World Series win, they're doing a little mixing of Santa and stickball. And then in Irwindale, just off the 605 freeway, not far from Pasadena, is a drive-through display you're really going to love, Santa Speedway.
Santa Speedway? Really? Is this like a NASCAR race or Formula One? What is this?
The entire racing complex out there in Irwindale, which includes a drag strip and a NASCAR track, it's been turned into a Christmas-like wonderland. They've never done anything like this before, and at the heart of it is this massive tree made of lights. It's over 100 feet tall. You could see it from miles away.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool, actually, and potentially blinding. You could probably see it from the space station.
Yeah, highly visible, to be sure. Before I went for a spin around the track to look at the millions of lights, though, I made a pit stop at Tim Huddleston's office. He's the president of Irwindale Speedway. He said the entire display came together after he randomly met a guy who did lights for some major venues around L.A.
So, happenstance, and we met each other about 5 weeks ago, and I said, hey, I got a lot of space and a lot of electricity and a lot of good people. He said, I got a lot of Christmas decorations.
Now, originally, Tim thought they might do a holiday drive-in movie theater, but after meeting Jason Zdenek, the light guy, the plan changed.
I thought, man, maybe we switch, dump the movie idea, and let's go big. You got a lot of lights, man. Let's partner up.
Steve, if that sounds uncannily fortuitous, just wait. We're about to turn up the weird factor to 11.
I said, well, my wife's really involved. He goes, yeah, so is mine. So we set up a meeting for our families to meet. He says, well, shoot, let's just meet somewhere out of the office. Where do you live? I said, I live in Agoura Hills. He said, I live in Agoura Hills. We literally live two blocks from each other. And we meet and walked in, and he introduced me to his wife, Lisa. And I turned around and introduced him to my wife, Lisa. So then we went down, and he introduced me to his oldest son, Trevor. And I introduced him to my oldest son, Trevor. You can't make this stuff up, man. I'm telling you.
Wow. That's unbelievable, Matt, except he just said it.
I know. So they partner up, and now there's more than 10 million lights across some 2 miles of racetrack. But like so many other businesses, Tim says this has been a devastating year for the Speedway. It's used for film and TV shoots, and he says those have been fairly consistent, but still, times are hard.
It's been tough. It's been tough. And our crew and our staff, they hung in there with me. And, you know, to get here, whatever chips we had left, we just pushed them all in right now. I'm telling you. We need to make our year in the next 5 weeks. It has to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's the case of so many people this year. We need to make do with what we have, but do so much with so little. And you can hear it in his voice, how serious this is. The lights provide people, obviously, with a festive outing, but it's not all fun. I mean, this is his livelihood, and it sounds like everything is on the line. this holiday season. Matt, you said you hit the track to look at the lights. How was it?
Well, thanks to some radio magic, I can take you along for a ride. Can I get some squiggly lines as we head into this flashback? Michael Bublé and Rod Stewart singing Winter Wonderland as I am pulling onto the actual NASCAR track now. There are little Santa helpers all around sort of directing the cars where to go. In the middle of the racetrack is that huge Christmas tree made out of lights. All right, so as Mariah comes to a close, the track that we are now on is taking us under the main grandstands. We're going into the reindeer stables. Oh, and wouldn't you know it, it's the Irwindale Speedway, the Santa Speedway. All of the reindeers in the reindeer area are cars decked out, draped in, totally covered with lights that are just changing colors, moving, flowing. All right, and at the end of the reindeer area, Mrs. Claus is standing there waving to you, saying Merry Christmas. And as you emerge, there is even some fake snow, as you can hear.
And here we are, back from the track, comfortable by the fire. Matt, can we hear the fire again? Cue the fire. Ah, good. Matt, that sounded like a really good outing. What's it going to cost you?
Santa Speedway is $59 per vehicle, with up to 8 people in the car or SUV. The Dodger Stadium Holiday Festival starts at $50, but it gets more expensive based on the time and day. If you wanted to go this weekend, you're looking at $115. A display at the Ventura County Fairgrounds will set you back about $70 for a weekend visit.
So there are a lot of these drive-through options this year, but what if, you know, because of the pandemic, things are kind of tough and you can't shell out to look at lights? You don't have $115 or $70 for a weekend visit, things like that. Are there some more affordable options?
Steve, hold on to your tacky sweater. How does free sound? There are still plenty of ways. Free! There are still plenty of ways to take in some seasonal decorations at no cost. I mean, stay at home as much as possible, savor your sable or your Douglas fir, but when you want some Yuletide cheer, just go for a drive through some well-lit neighborhoods. In Pasadena, the Upper Hastings Ranch neighborhood has gone all out. Altadena's Christmas Tree Lane is still going strong. In fact, it's celebrating its 100th year. And out in the Inland Empire, residents of Rancho Cucamonga who live on Thoroughbred and Jennet Streets are attempting to be visible from space.
As we mentioned, the International Space Station can probably see these things. With all those lights, obviously, it's also the season of carols. So not only can you see things, you can hear a lot. Carols and choirs and choruses. I'm guessing the pandemic is probably...
Oh my.
Yeah, oh my, exactly. I'm guessing the pandemic has probably put the brakes on a lot of the singing, right?
Yeah. Keeping those respiratory droplets to yourself means no big public concerts or sing-alongs. But you are still going to be able to enjoy one of the most iconic musical events of the season. Do your thing, Radio Magic. Nix the fireplace. Up with the music.
Okay. Oh, I totally recognize that, but I can't put my finger on it. What is it?
Steve, what's the holiday season without the Nutcracker?
Oh, the Nutcracker, of course. But how do you do ballet, Matt, when no one can sit in a theater? I mean, is this a Zoom thing? Are we balleting on Zoom?
Not exactly a Zoom thing, but it's definitely on point for 2020. Ooh. See what I did Ooh. There?
Yeah, it sure is.
It's the season of giving, Steve, so give me a break. Since Los Angeles Ballet isn't able to stage their annual performance of the Nutcracker at venues all around the city, they are bringing it to you. I'll let Colleen Neary, the co-artistic director of Los Angeles Ballet, explain.
So we came up with this idea of Clara's Nutcracker Tea Party that happens in her home. We invite everyone in to meet some of the characters, and then they will see sections of the Nutcracker from our previous performances. It's very interactive also. The children will interact with Clara. They'll receive a party box, and she'll open gifts from it that will turn into one of the characters and then go into the dancing scene. It will be a charming, charming thing.
Charming, yeah. You got to hand it to him, Matt. I mean, that's a really good pandemic pivot. What are the details? How do I get one of those party boxes?
Los Angeles Ballet is using the Nutcracker Tea as a fundraiser, but it's actually still pretty accessible. The tea party is December 20th, and you can live stream it for $39. If you want a party box to open along with Clara and her friends, which of course I know you do, Steve, that'll cost you $125.
Of course.
Higher giving levels include a tea service you can pick up with sandwiches and sweets.
All right. Crustless sandwiches, a high tea, and a giant lit-up NASCAR track. I mean, lots of ways, Matt, to stay safe. Well, I guess enjoying a bit of the magic this holiday season. We can't all do it, and obviously things are a lot different this year. But Matt Gillum, thank you for all the suggestions. I'll be waiting for that party box, by the way.
You and me both, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Messaging. We've talked a lot about messaging when it comes to COVID-19 and safety measures. There's been city and county and state messaging, health department messaging, some mixed messaging, basically a whole lot of messaging in English and, by the way, Spanish. Even so, for thousands of folks in greater LA, it's been a challenge to get the message. Enter Radio Indígena. This is one of the broadcasts in Ventura County to more than 20,000 indigenous folks in the region. Folks who need information, messages, like for example about the vaccine or when to wear a mask, like in the PSA we just heard. Arsenio Lopez is executive director of the Mixteco Indígena Community Organizing Project, which is a nonprofit behind the radio station there in Ventura County. Arsenio, welcome to you.
Thank you.
The clip I just played, I don't know what was said. Can you tell us what that PSA was all about?
Of course. So that's about, it's in the Triqui language, which is one of the 17 indigenous languages in the state of Oaxaca. So it's giving instruction about the importance of following protocols now during COVID-19, such as how to wear the mask, where to wear the mask, how often to wash your hands, and so on.
What were you hearing about COVID and being able to, you know, be, I mean, the thing about communication is transmission and reception, right? You've got to be able to receive that information. And if it's not coming to you in your native language, you're not getting that message. What were you hearing from the indigenous communities about how they were getting those messages or maybe not getting them?
You know, we were hearing about this virus, but we never thought it's going to hit in our, you know, communities. So in March of this year, it hit Ventura County, where Radio Indígena is. So a lot of the information that was we were hearing was in English, very few in Spanish, and of course, we're not in indigenous languages. So a lot of our people who work in the agriculture industry are are indigenous farm workers. We're not getting that, you know, awareness. They were not learning this unknown virus. What is that about? How you're gonna get infected? How that works? Or what we're gonna do? You know. So our people that we work with, they were questioning. They were having a lot of questions like, "What does that mean?" So we saw a need of us as a nonprofit organization to step up and start doing some PSAs and videos and all that kind of information, you know, resources for them and indigenous languages.
So it's more than just I'm not getting the information. It's more of a there's misinformation, there's distrust about the information that they're getting, things like that, in addition to the language barrier, right?
Correct. I think you're speaking or we are knowing about a very vulnerable population, you know. So the farm worker communities, there's many who are undocumented. When you are undocumented or you are migrant communities, we already know about there is a lot of discrimination, a lot of racism. And of course, there's a lot of fears into it. So people don't trust. I think that's one of the biggest problems that we do have here. Don't trust in the government entities. So they make trust on CBOs like us that we work with them directly. So one of the things we were encouraging them is that they should not believe on information that they don't come for very trusted source. So we know, by doing this work for the last almost 20 years, that these populations are being often victims of, you know, scams and people taking advantage of them. And during this time, we have heard many different stories, you know, people telling our communities that they should not be believing in this virus, that this is not a real thing, that this is a very, like, a situation where the government wants to intimidate the community. So we're telling people that they should not be listening to that, that they should be listening to, you know, like, resources like Radio Indígena, for example, where we are making sure that the information we're providing are based on facts.
We know, Arsenio, that COVID has affected migrant communities, lower economic income communities, places like that where there are a lot of immigrants, where there are a lot of people who don't have access to the tools, or maybe live in a place that exacerbates the virus even more. And I wonder, you know, the fact that we're getting so many mixed messages and things like that, you know, how important you think your role is in the community to spread that message?
I think it's very crucial now more than ever, you know, that and this is what we're doing. We're having conversations because we are the ones who are in the grounds, who are hearing from our people. Our people trust us. We go and provide them with information. One thing we did is that in the first instance where the pandemic started, you know, a lot of our people, they don't have health insurance. One of the things we told our local public health agency, we said, can you waive these any fees related to COVID-19 symptoms? So people can come and they should not be worried about later getting a medical bill, that it can be pretty high. Because a lot of our families, as you just said, are low-income families. They don't make enough money to be able to afford these. What we know, you know, medical bills can be very, very high, very expensive. So, and of course, they're listening to us and they waive those fees. Actions like that, you know, that type of change really makes a difference, you know, towards helping our communities and helping the whole society, you know, and this battle that we have on coronavirus.
And as we all know, the vaccines are starting to get developed and introduced into populations. We've already started to see it across the pond in Europe. We'll see it in the United States very soon as well. Do you think that the community is more informed now about the vaccine coming down? Are they more trustful? Or do you think it's the same and folks are hesitant about it?
Definitely our folks are hesitant about it. They don't trust. I went ahead and I asked this to our communities. Our people are saying, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I'm going to be a victim of this. Like, how real this is going to be. How sure I'm going to be that this vaccine is not going to kill me. That's one thing. The second other thing, I mean, the fear, right? So, and the other barriers are the economic barriers. So this is just some few challenges or factors that we already had identified is going to be a problem if vaccine becomes available.
Well, as we mentioned at the top, messaging and trust, transmission and reception of those messages and being able to trust those messages are all keys to making this better for everybody. And I want to thank you, Arsenio Lopez, who's the executive director of the Mixteco Indígena Community Organizing Project. Arsenio, thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. You take care.
A Los Angeles Superior Court judge this week sided with restaurants, saying the county should have to provide solid proof that outdoor dining is a major contributor to rising COVID cases. The ruling, however, is of little consequence since the state has also decided to shut down outdoor dining in the Southern California region because of the alarming rise of coronavirus and people in the hospital due to the virus. It's not the first time that restaurants have been through this painful process. But this time around, they're starting to push back. Call it fatigue or distrust or straight up anger. They want to know why dining is restricted while other kinds of businesses get to operate with imposed limits. Mona Holmes is a reporter at Eater LA, a regular contributor here at Greater LA, and she's here to tell us more. Hey, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
One of the loudest voices pushing back was a woman who She had to shut down her outdoor dining. She paid a lot of money to set up this elaborate thing outside, only to see a film crew's setup of craft services, which looked almost identical to what she had outside, a tent with tables and chairs, right next door. Let's hear from her.
They have not given us money, and they have shut us down. We cannot survive. My staff cannot survive. Look at this. Tell me that this is dangerous. But right next to me, as a slap in my face, that's safe. This is safe.
That's Angela Marsden, who owns a place in Sherman Oaks. Her video went viral, saying she's on the verge of losing everything. It should be noted, film crews have strict measures and testing to be on that set. They have to test for coronavirus, but you can still hear, Mona, the frustration in her voice.
I can. It's heartbreaking. And while Angela Marsden, who owns a place called Pineapple Hill Saloon and Grill, you know, that's definitely something that people have rallied behind. You know, she's actually wound up raising a little bit of money on a GoFundMe to help support her restaurant, which is a very good thing. I mostly see a similar sense of frustration on restaurant social media profiles, where the posts on Instagram and Facebook, they'll ask customers to come in for a discount for their food or drink. They'll start to post where they limit their hours. And unfortunately, some of those posts in the last couple of weeks have been where they're announcing that they're closing or just going all out, letting everyone know how terrible it's been for them. They feel like there's a different standard for restaurants than for other businesses that are still allowed to operate.
Well, I want to sort of unpack that a little bit, because at a restaurant, you're at a table with other people. You're pretty close to them. You're eating. Chances are, as Barbara Ferrer, the public health director in LA County, has said, you're, you know, likely with other households. So there's what they're saying, what the county public health department is saying is, hey, it's more dangerous when you're in a situation like that as opposed to walking into, say, a Bloomingdale's.
Listen, I have listened to a ton of Dr. Barbara Ferrer's briefings all year, and I believe that her messaging is consistent with making sure that you stay away from anyone who's outside of your household. However, these restaurants have taken on a huge expense to expand their dining to sidewalks, to parking lots, and there's often the belief that restaurant owners feel that they've taken the protocols to make sure that their customers and their staff are safe. And that safety also extends to being outdoors in the open air versus indoors like a shopping mall. And that absolutely is a huge part of their frustration. They don't feel like they're being treated fairly as a business.
And the pushback then means, I mean, it could be a viral video that we just heard Angela Marsden. It could be at Eat at Joe's. That's in Redondo Beach, right?
That's correct.
So Eat at Joe's stayed open even despite the order. So what are the ramifications in doing something like that?
Back in March, when everything was terrifying and mysterious, I found that restaurants really wanted to comply with the public health order. But now restaurants like Eat at Joe's, the Silver Dollar Pancake House in Corona, they are willing to risk losing their health permits, which is a huge deal. It takes so much money and so much time to get those approved and to have them revoked. Tells me that these people are absolutely desperate to make sure that their businesses stay open, that their employees end up getting paid and their communities end up getting fed.
I mean, is that what you're seeing? Are we seeing fines levied against these businesses? Are we seeing permits getting pulled?
Oh, the consequences are exactly that. I mean, Eat at Joe's got their health permit revoked. There's another restaurant that is in Agoura Hills called Crony Sports Grill. The owner, Dave Folds, he was fined $1,500 for refusing to shut down his outdoor dining area. There's also the threat of losing your ABC license, your liquor license as well. And talk about another very pricey permit to secure for any restaurant.
What do you think the future looks like, Mona? I mean, what happens? I mean, to these restaurants, what will we be seeing?
It's not looking good at all. It would be absolutely best if Congress would wind up passing the Restaurant CARES Act. That would probably be the only hope for them right now.
As much as I hate it, I have to end it there with bleak. Mona Holmes, reporter for Eater LA, and of course one of our regular contributors. Mona, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, that's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, the city spends millions turning an old motel that's been housing the unhoused into a new motel that isn't housing anyone yet. So who's making money here? A KCRW investigation tomorrow. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share with us how you're doing, your thoughts about your holiday plans, if you have any. And please, please stay safe. kcrw.com/greaterLA. And subscribe to the podcast, too. Jenna Cagle, Angel Carreras, Sonia Geis, Mario Diaz, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears, and have a great night.